Cache number 13917, Mrs. A.V. Mason, reel 4.
Mrs. Mason, reel 4. Now, as the Israelis squeezed the air line of supply, in order to build up stocks, the British forces, Jordan, got help from American transport aircraft who flew in to deliver fuel other stores. Do you remember seeing them at all?
I do. I remember this. I remember this, and everybody talking about, and my husband talking about the difficulty of overflying Israel, and you know the corridor. And I do remember the huge American transports coming in, laden with supplies of all sorts. Yes, I do remember that.
Do you remember your husband saying anything about why the Israelis were being difficult? Did he express an opinion about...
Well, the Israelis were always suspicious of the Arabs anyway, any Arab, anywhere. And it just... No, he didn't say why particularly. But it didn't seem strange that the Israelis were making it difficult.
Just a natural thing.
The natural thing. I think I better get a glass of water. Sorry about that.
Do you recall when you first felt that the crisis was beginning to die down? That, you know, the real threat was over and you could start relaxing?
Well, it was July that it happened. I would say... By the autumn, and I can't remember when they all left.
Towards the end of October and November.
Yeah,
when
I would say September-ish. The crisis had passed. Now the situation in Iraq at that time, and again I can't remember what happened to the union between Iraq and Jordan. Well, it fell apart. Mm. And it sort of came to a natural end.
It was declared dissolved. Yeah. In the first instance, King Hussein said that since Faisal had been murdered, he was automatically head of the union, and that would have provided the legal basis for any intervention into Baghdad.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Since he couldn't get anyone to support him in doing that, he's quietly dropped it in the end.
Yeah. The situation in Jordan... The crisis was over by, let us say, September, and I think that we began to hear the likelihood that the troops would go soonish, and they did in October, as you say.
The Jordanians weren't very keen on the idea of them going there. I think they felt it was quite a nice thing to have them as a...
I don't blame them. It was very nice, but I think that they... I'm sure there are people who couldn't wait to see the back of them. I mean, you can't keep troops of a foreign country there forever, and I think that probably this is where diplomacy comes in. They realise that the shortest possible time is the best possible time that troops can remain in the country.
Well, there's always the risk of incidents if the troops get bored.
The troops get bored, and people of the country get tired of having them there, and the potential for trouble is just enormous, really.
Did you hear of any incidents of trouble?
No, I didn't hear of any incidents of trouble at all. There must have been, but I certainly... I don't remember seeing young parachute soldiers walking around the town. You see, there are no pubs. I would think that probably they used the facilities on base if they wanted a pint of beer or a game of darts, but they certainly didn't. They couldn't find anything much to do in town if they wanted to.
No suitable places of entertainment?
No suitable places of entertainment at all, no. There must have been holes in the wall, but I don't know where they were, and I think they'd be very hard to find. And I don't know how welcome they would have been. So, yes, you saw them driving through town and occasionally on the pavement sort of shopping, but not sort of in twos and threes as you would see them with an afternoon off, not at all.
The Jordanian government was trying to bargain with a release date, as it were, for the British forces, Jordan, saying that they thought that it would be unfair to remove the brigade unless they were given something in return. And What they were asking for was help to equip and train two additional brigades of Bedouin infantry, and there was a certain amount of controversy about that. I don't know whether you heard anything about that at all.
No, I didn't know anything about that. Mm. But it's I'm not surprised to hear it at all. It's the sort of thing the Arabs would bargain for.
Well, there was a certain feeling in some quarters they were just trying it on to see if they could get something.
Yeah.
In fact, they, to the British side, they were saying all they wanted was two brigades of infantry with simple weapons for internal security duties. But they gave the American embassy the impression that what they were talking about was two brigade groups, which would have involved armour and artillery.
Yes, they're quite different.
They had the idea that the Americans had got more money to give away.
yeah.
And in the end, I don't think they got much help.
No, but, well, yes, again, I can't throw much light on that at all.
Right. I was told that during the presence of British forces in Jordan, there was an enormous increase in the volume of traffic going through the embassy. Signals traffic, that is, and that wires had to be mobilised to do the cipher work to encode and decode messages. Did you get involved in that?
No, I didn't, no. Perhaps because I'm foreign born. And perhaps because I had my children at home.
Yes.
There were other wives who had no home commitments who could do it, but no, I didn't get involved at all in that.
Towards the end, when things were being sorted out and the precise details of the withdrawal being cleared, obviously it had to be cleared not just with the Jordanian government, but with the Syrians and Egyptians.
Yeah.
The
whole panoply of...
All the neighbours looking over the fence, as it were. The Iraqis, too, of course, were much reassured that British troops were withdrawing.
Yeah.
The United Nations got involved on quite a large scale. Do you remember seeing anything of them? Dag Hammarskjöld came out on a visit, for example.
I remember him coming. It's funny, we haven't mentioned the United Nations at all in this conversation. The United Nations, we were very aware of them. Mm. But they were there on a refugee sort of UNRWA.
The Work and Relief Agency.
Work and Relief, that's it. And I remember Hammarskjöld having made a visit, but I didn't meet him. Mm. I don't know who he came to see, to be honest. I suppose he was a guest of the king.
He came to see the king and Samir.
Samir Rafai.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also to see, I mean, obviously the British Embassy was involved in dealing with him while he was there.
But certainly I didn't meet him, but I do remember. I'm sorry, I can't throw any light on that.
Well, I thought you might have met him, you know, while he was passing through.
Alas, no.
Yeah. And he sent off a special representative as part of the deal, a chap called Spinelli.
Oh, Spinelli?
Yes.
Yes, what was his first name? We did know him, and I didn't realise he was one of Hammarskjöld's representatives.
Yes, I think the idea was that in order to monitor possible interference with the Jordanian domestic politics by Egyptian propaganda or subversion or Syrian aggression and propaganda, that there should be a UN representative, because by the terms of the deal which was put together, Jordan effectively came under a form of UN protection against indirect aggression. And I think the idea was that Spinelli should be there to monitor the local situation and to handle any complaints from the Jordanians.
Yeah. I remember him. He was a charming man. Mm. To be honest, I wasn't quite sure what he was doing there. Mm. But I remember he was United Nations, but then there were a lot of people running around doing jobs, and somehow you either knew what they did or you didn't ask them too carefully because they didn't want to tell you.
I think Spinelli's job was just to be there, really, as a pair of eyes and ears.
Yeah. No.
Did you do you remember seeing General Odd Bull? He was a Norwegian general who was put in charge of the evacuation arrangements.
And that's a name that I haven't heard of in years, but I remember.
Well, he'd been in Lebanon, in the United Nations group in Lebanon, and he came to help negotiate terms of withdrawal and arrange for the airlift out of the,
I see.
The parachute brigade.
Again, he's a name. Mm-hmm. I think I met him, mm-hmm. but I can't throw much light on him.
Okay. Is there anything else about this particular crisis and time that you call to mind that you think is significant?
No, I think we've said everything that I think is significant. Again, it's a very long time ago, to speak just from memory. I think we've just about covered it.
Do you think you personally learned any lessons from involved in this affair?
I think that the lesson always is never to be proud and arrogant, but to keep your ear close to the ground. And had one's ears been closer to the ground in Baghdad, this may not have happened. But if it had to happen, my impressions were that it happened extremely well, and I'm just a civilian on the ground. And it happened extremely well, and I can't remember, from my point of view, anything going wrong. There must have been. But my husband would have told me if ghastly things had gone wrong. I didn't know that there was a possibility of an attack by various elements of the Jordanian army, for example.
Well, that was only speculation. And In fact, the people in Nicosia took it seriously, but the embassy in Amman really didn't.
That's perhaps why I didn't hear about it.
Well, they went to see the king and asked him about it because they felt that he had a good knowledge of what was going on in the army. The king didn't think it was serious at all.
Yeah,
he thought there were perhaps a few officers who might have been wobbly, but certainly he wasn't worried about the loyalty of the soldiers. So this seems to have been a false threat generated in the imaginations of people sitting in Cyprus.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think they're being careful, being judicious, but still. It seemed to me that it fulfilled its purpose. It propped up, gave the king great support. I was going to say propped up, and that's not the right word. It gave him great support when he badly needed it. And we've got a country called Jordan to this day. It's a greatly reduced one since then. But that's another story altogether. I'm interested, were the Jordanians earlier, you asked me, for example, afraid of an attack by Israel. I don't think that the possibility of Israel lashing out as they did during the Seven Days' War occurred to them then. It certainly did later, but not then. Perhaps because the Israeli army wasn't up to it at that time. Israel was still too young a nation. But it's curious that you still got the refugee camps, third generation now, full of potential rioters and stone throwers.
And the Bedou army still to control them?
The Bedou army still to control them, as far as I know. They still are fiercely loyal to the king. More than to the country, it's the king, the Hashemite. But as far, I wonder, this is a question, whether the Hashemites are now as significant in Arab lore as they were when in the 1950s when we were there. I somehow doubt it, because these things change. King Hussein has assured his successor will be his brother. And after his brother, I don't know. And Hassan is a very good chap. He was a very young boy when we were there, but a very stable, very nice young man. So we shall see.